What up, y'all? Honestly, I felt the need to rant today. Earlier, I tweeted that I wasn't angry, that I was more apathetic than anything. I fucking lied. I am angry. And I'm angry for a myriad of reasons, so I'm recording this because I can't go into Kirk's green room and, you know what I'm saying, I don't have a math-centric podcast. So I'm just going to record my thoughts, and if you enjoy me calling everyone on the team a motherfucker for about 20 to 30 minutes, then strap in and enjoy. So, the Mavs just got their ass bust by the Thunder. I don't care how close the game was. We got an ass bust. They outplayed us. They out-hustled us. They out-everythinged us. And honestly, I'm just sick of watching the same fucking team. You know what I'm saying? Look, the incompetent stuff. I mean, look, we can get into individual players, right? But like I said, they can't help but be who they are. I think it's on us as fans convincing ourselves that there's something other than what they are. And I think it's Mark Cuban in the front office's fault for not being able to properly evaluate our own players. You feel what I'm saying? One of my biggest frustrations with Mavs fandom, right? Because look, I'm new to this whole Mavs fandom thing. Up until about maybe 6 months ago, I didn't know another Mavs fan in my actual personal life. I didn't interact with Mavs fans. I didn't join any chats, or I wasn't involved in any Mavs fans communities on Facebook or anywhere like that. I was a Mavs fan in my own little bubble. So thankfully, I've gotten a couple platforms that have exposed me to some other Mavs fans. And for the most part, it's good. But there are some negative things. You know what I'm saying? And the biggest thing is just, I'm convinced that a lot of Mavs fans don't own League Pass. I'm convinced that a lot of Mavs fans don't watch other, they don't watch any games that aren't Mavs games or nationally televised games. Like, I just don't think people are watching other games. Now, look, I get it, right? I'm different than the average fan. I'm a piece of shit. I'm a degenerate gambler. Unless the IRS is listening, in that case, I'm completely joking. This is all just for fun. But because of my disease and my desire to gamble on a nightly basis, yes, I have multiple TVs. I have 4 to 5 games at all times. And I'm watching all of them intently because I'm convinced I have ADHD or some version of it. I'm on the spectrum in some way. But when you look at other teams, you're able to actually better evaluate your own team. When all you know is your team, well, yeah, marginal players become important players in your eyes because that's all you know. You're like a girl who's only had one boyfriend her entire life, and she thinks she has the dating scene figured out. Like, no, to you, your boyfriend or your girlfriend, that may be all you know, but there's an entire world of other people out there that you have no experience with, or that you just don't understand how the world works. And so you're going to tell me that your boyfriend or girlfriend is the greatest of all time, but in reality, they're probably annoying to be around. Probably not a good person. They probably just suck, right? But you don't know any better because that's all you know. And that's the same things with you Mavs fans. Like, bro, our players are marginal at best. 3-and-D, we don't have the closest we have to a 3-and-D player is Dorian Finney-Smith, but he's more like Robert Covington. Yes, he's a good team defender, and if he's in your lineup, he's not going to get exposed. But you don't want to put him on the other team's best offensive player night in and night out because he's going to get fucking cooked. He's going to get cooked. That's just a fact. Reggie Bullock can't fucking shoot. He had a good game tonight, but okay, congrats. Even a fucking broken clock is right twice a day. You feel what I'm saying? But overall, do you feel good about the contract that you gave him? You think anybody's knocking down our doors to add Reggie Bullock for a playoff run? The answer, spoiler alert, nah. Probably not. Maxi Kleber, I love him, right? I love him. I feel like he's one of our own, right? He was undrafted. We brought him in. We developed him. We gave him more time, and he blossomed to a nice player. But injuries have sapped him of most of his usefulness because, really, he's a 15 to 20 minute a game player. You know what I'm saying? He's not a starter. He shouldn't be a starter. But if he's coming off your bench, then, hey, he can close in certain situations, and you can kind of implore him to help rim protect and be a solid defender in most situations. But he doesn't have the athleticism that he once had. So he's a shell of his former self. Other than that, I mean, who do we have? Sterling Brown, he's trash. Frankie Smokes, I mean, come on. You know what I'm saying? Like, the players that we lust over and that we obsess about, they're not that good. Now, really, right? And there's two players that, First, Josh Green. Shout out to Bibbs. You know what I'm saying? I was in one of his spaces. He was telling me about all the sports Josh Green played in high school. And because of that, that's why he moves different. He plays different. Yeah, he plays like someone who just learned the game of basketball. All those physical traits and all those skills he learned in other sports, they've yet to translate on the basketball court. He's okay. He'll go out there. He'll do the jazz hands. He'll make you think he's doing some exciting shit. He might even catch an occasional alley-oop. But that's not somebody that should be starting, and he's definitely not the future, right? But we fucked up. We could have took Desmond Bane, who was blossoming to, you know, a really, really, really good player out in Memphis. And so we so desperately want Josh Green to be good that if he just ties his shoes correctly, we're fucking putting together a highlight reel of him tying his fucking shoes with like a fucking hip hop song in the background. I'm like, oh my God, look at Josh Green. Bro, he's not that good. He's not that guy. Maybe he's an NBA rotational player, but he's certainly not a building block. He's certainly not somebody that's going to shape the future of this team. And then next up, Brunson. Now look, I love Brunson, right? I love Brunson. Everybody counted him out. Everybody said he was too small. He was too slow. He wasn't going to be able to get it done. And look, shout out to him for working his ass off and improving as a player to where he is not just an NBA caliber player, but a good, right? A good. He's a good NBA player. But again, his value to us is different than his value around the league. To us, he's of the utmost importance because we only have, he's the only motherfucker outside of Luka that can actually dribble the basketball. So for us, yeah, he's probably worth the 20 mil to us because if you let Brunson walk, we literally don't have anybody else capable of running the pick and roll or running the offense whenever Luka sits, right? So maybe to us, he's worth that 20 million. But that doesn't mean that in a vacuum that that's his worth. He's not a $20 million a year player. You know what I'm saying? He's just not. And even if he's, if you consider him to be a starter, I'll give you that, right? I'll give you, okay, maybe he's a starting caliber point guard in this league. Cool. He's replacement level. When you look at the grand scheme of things, he's replacement level. He's not raising your ceiling. He can raise your floor, right? He can make your second unit more credible when he's out there. And in certain lineups, yes, he provides a certain floor just because he's a competent ball handler, but he's not raising your ceiling. You don't want to give him the ball and say, hey, go create a shot opportunity for yourself or for somebody else. Because against some of the bad defensive teams, sure, he can do that and have some moderate success. But we've seen long athletes lock his ass up. So again, this upside that you guys speak of, that Mavs fans speak of, I don't see it. I don't understand it. Right? I just don't. And so, okay, enough about the players, right? The bigger issue is a fucking front office. Now, I get labeled a negative Nancy. I get labeled a bad fan because, look, I don't care about y'all trades for marginal players for two reasons. The first, we have no fucking trade assets. I've said it fucking ad nausea. You know what I'm saying? Like, we don't have trade assets. So even if you say our best quote-unquote assets are Jalen Brunson and Dorian Finney-Smith, the reason that they're valuable today is because they're on good contracts. So mostly for a team, the value in Brunson comes from the ability to retain his bird rights. And if, let's say, you're a team that's going to have cap space this offseason, you can trade for Brunson. He's going to have a really low cap hold. He's not going to eat until the bulk of your cap space. You can go out there, make other moves, sign other players. And then once you've used up your cap space, if you want to go and sign him to a $20 million a year deal, it's okay because the opportunity cost in that situation is negligible, right? You've used up your cap space. He didn't cut into it. You used it. And then you went over the cap to sign Brunson. Because you were a cap space team, you don't run into the danger of being a tax team. And so you can afford to pay him whatever you want on a short 3 or 4. Or even if you want to go to full 4 years, you can afford to pay him for 4 years. And it's not really going to hinder your flexibility in any way. But if you're a team like the Mavericks where you don't have any assets, right? You don't have draft picks, right? We're not flush with draft picks. We're not going to be a cap space team for the next 2 summers, maybe the summer after next, depending on KP's contract, right? Then once he signs for $20 million a year, whatever value he had as a player, the contract negates a lot of that value. And that's my biggest frustration with a lot of fans is that when they look at players, they fail to ignore the contracts. Money matters, right? You would love to have Dorian Finney-Smith, but you would much rather have Dorian Finney-Smith making $4 million a year versus having Dorian Finney-Smith making $15 or $16 million a year. And so his value will not be the same on a $15 million a year deal as it was on a $4 million a year deal. And let's say we decided, you know what, we're done with Dorian Finney-Smith. Ask yourself, realistically, how much are you getting back in a trade for Dorian Finney-Smith right now? Let's just say a contender wanted a wing for their playoff run, which we've seen players like Robert Covington go for 2 first-round picks. We've seen rumors of Harrison Barnes being rumored to be worth at least one real first rounder and maybe like a fake or heavily protected first rounder, but more than one first round pick, a first round pick plus. Do you even think we're getting a first round pick for Dorian Finney-Smith? And even if we are, it's definitely going to be lottery protected, and more than likely it's going to be top 20 protected, right? So at that point, what are you getting? You're getting a lottery ticket. You're getting a scratch off. Maybe you strike gold in the 20s. But ask yourself this. Have the Mavericks shown any ability to find hidden gems in the draft? I'll give you Brunson. All right, cool. But even then, he came with a certain pedigree, right? He was a two-time national championship winner in college. So it wasn't like Brunson was playing for like Santa Barbara Community College. No. He had been on national TV. People knew who Brunson was. He played for two really good teams. You know what I'm saying? But other than that, like, we suck at drafting. So to recap thus far, we suck at evaluating our own players. That's the reason that we don't make a lot of trades, is because another team is never going to meet our asking price because we overvalue the shit out of our own players. So we suck at self-evaluation. We don't have any extra draft picks, so we don't have any draft capital. So we're not going to draft a needle mover or a savior in all likelihood. Is it possible? Anything's fucking possible. I can find $100 in some old sweatpants. Is it likely? No. But if I find $100 in my sweatpants, does that all of a sudden make me a financial guru or a savant? No. It just, I struck gold. It happened. It was luck. You know what I'm saying? But that's the thing. There's always going to be a certain amount of luck when it comes to team building, but luck should not be the primary strategy for team building, right? And I've heard, so that Nico, you bring it. We said the last decade of incompetence was because we didn't have a GM with relationships, right? Donnie wasn't a relationship guy. Cuban didn't have relationships with other players. We were never the cool team. That's why nobody wanted to come here. We didn't have any relationships. So we go out, we get a Nike exec. All right, cool. All right, he has relationships. How is he going to leverage those relationships? To the draft? No, I've never seen a GM use his connections in the draft. I mean, you can try and manipulate draft workouts and keep certain players from certain situations. But at the end of the day, if a player is good, people are going to know about it. You know what I'm saying? Everyone laughed at the Warriors because they thought they were so slick with what they tried to do with Samanich or whatever his name is. But everyone knew what they were trying to do. The reason no one stopped him is because nobody else believed in him as a player the way the Warriors did. And they did all that, you know, maneuvering, and ultimately it didn't work out. But anyway, I digress. So he can't leverage his relationships in the draft. When you have no trade assets, it's hard to use it. It's hard to use your influence in the trade market because let's say, hey, look, Anthony Davis, Rich Paul, right? They use their connections to tank his trade value. They leaked it that he would never play for the Celtics, even though the Celtics had the best package of picks and young players at the time for Anthony Davis. But whatever, they were able to maneuver Anthony Davis to the Lakers. But the Lakers ultimately had players and draft picks that other teams wanted. We don't even have our own picks. We can't trade our own first until 26 or 27 or whatever the fuck we can trade that pick. So no draft picks, no cap space for the time being, and a GM who is supposed to leverage relationships, but we have no way for him to leverage his relationships. So does that mean that it's impossible? No, it's possible, but it takes the courage to make difficult decisions. My plan is that year, that summer where Porzingis' contract comes off the books, that's the summer that we should be targeting. And I know, I can already hear y'all bitching and complaining, but X, but we did that for a fucking decade and it never worked. Why would we want to go with the same strategy now if it didn't work before? Well, that's why you bought in Nico, right? You brought in Nico to fix the errors, to fix the issues, so that a plan that didn't work before Nico got here can work once Nico's here. So yes, trade everything that isn't nailed down to the floor. Tim Hardaway Jr., hey, find a way to trade him for a contract that runs a year shorter. That's all. You don't even have to get draft picks because you're not getting draft picks, right? He's a negative asset. Go trade for an equally toxic contract that runs a year shorter. Now, a contract that runs a year shorter, now that expires at the same time as Porzingis. You feel what I'm saying? Bullock, he should be off the books by the time I believe that Porzingis' contract runs out. And so now you don't have all this long-term money clogging up your cap the summer that Porzingis comes off the books. But if you sign Brunson to a four-year deal for $20 million a year, guess what? Now it doesn't matter that Porzingis' money is coming off the books because now you have $20 million eating away at your cap space. Oh, you want to sign Tadomi Finney-Smith to a $15 million a year contract because that's what he's asking for. Now you're going to see on Twitter that, oh, he, you know, most people think he's going to get the mid-level exemption. I promise you, there's no way for that Dorian Finney-Smith signs for anything less than $11 million a year. I would put the floor at $12 to $13 million a year. So now you have $33 million eating up your potential cap space the same offseason that Porzingis money comes off the books, right? So what are we doing? What's the plan? And that's my frustration with this front office is, what is the plan? Locking in this roster of average talent and it being a luxury tax-paying team, it's asinine. Again, Mavs fans, Mark Cuban is not cheap. He's not. He hasn't had an opportunity to be cheap. Shout out to Kirk, because he understood what I was trying to say. You feel what I'm saying? When you preserve cap space, you're not going to be a luxury tax team. The way that you become a luxury tax team is when you have players with low cap holds, you know what I'm saying, because you found them in a draft or you signed them or undrafted, whatever. Then you have cap space, you go out, you use that cap space, and then you sign those players with low cap holds to market contracts, and then that's what gets you close to the luxury tax. And then as your younger players go from rookie scale contracts to actual extensions, that's how you get into the luxury tax. Well, guess what? We haven't drafted anyone that's been worth giving a big money extension to. So Cuban hasn't had the ability to be cheap. So stop saying that. It's a fucking myth. I know it sounds cool. There's a million fucking things to blame Cuban for. Him being cheap is fucking not one of them. It's just not. It's not based in fact. Stop saying that. That's the one. It's like when you repeat a lie enough times, so enough people start to believe it. Mark Cuban being cheap is a fucking myth. What he is incompetent. Now, again, self-awareness. If I would have hit the lotto tomorrow and have billions of dollars and I purchased my favorite basketball team or baseball team, bro, I'd be dressing up and I'd demand that I get 30 minutes a night, right? So at the end of the day, is it hypocritical of me to shit on Cuban for wanting to be so involved? Yes, because I would do the exact same thing in his shoes, but I'm not in his shoes. But also at the same time, if you love something enough, which I believe Mark Cuban, other than his family and his wife and his children, loves the Dallas Mavericks more than anything else in his life. At a certain point, you have to love something enough to let it go, to walk away. Yo, you're still an NBA owner. You're still going to get the courtside seats. You're still going to be mixy at all the events. But you don't have to be involved in the day-to-day decision-making. A decade plus should tell you that you're just not good at it. But maybe because you were behind the trade for Dirk, you think, well, I did that. I was involved in the trade for Luka, so you can't tell me I don't know shit. It's more than that. You know what I'm saying? Yes, you drafted two generational players. But that doesn't mean that you know what the fuck you're doing. And so that's my frustration when you hear rumors that, now look, part of it could be posturing, right? Part of it could be, all right, well, they're just saying that they want to hold on to Brunson and Dorian Finney-Smith and that there's no way they're going to let them walk because you're trying to drum up trade value. But guess what? Most competent GMs read through that nonsense. Just because you say that, a GM that was the Knicks, for example, like, oh, man, well, we were going to get Brunson for a second rounder before, but now that it's been leaked that the Mavs really don't want to let Brunson walk, well, now we've got a call with a godfather offer. Or else the Mavericks would never part with Brunson. It's a negotiating tactic. It's a fucking ploy. But most people are going to redo it. So a player's trade value is not going to all of a sudden increase because of what the Mavs leaked to the media. In fact, the reason why the Mavs probably leaked that to the media was because the offers that they were getting for Brunson, Dorian, and Finney-Smith weren't good. And guess what? There's a reason for that. There's very few teams that view Jalen Brunson as a difference maker. Sure, he's good if he's starting for you. He's okay. He's solid. He's perfectly average. But no one is saying, you know what? If we sign Jalen Brunson, the sky's the fucking limit. No one's saying that. No one's telling themselves that if they trade for Dorian Finney-Smith, that all of a sudden he's going to turn around their defense, or all of a sudden their offense is going to be on a better trajectory the rest of the season. No one is saying that, right? Because when you have marginal average talent, on some nights, they're going to play well. And on other nights, they're not going to play well. But at season's end, you're going to look at their stats, you're going to look at their impact, and you're going to say, perfectly average. Dorian Finney-Smith is an average basketball player. Brunson is slightly above average. He's good, but he's not great. And so you don't fuck up your future flexibility with a good but not great player. It's not worth it. Look at the Wizards with Davis Bertans. Look at what they did. Look at what we did with Tim Hardaway Jr. Look at the Spurs with fucking McDermott. Look at all these fucking teams who were in Bird Wright's traps, who gave these players who weren't worth that money a big money extension just because they were valuable to them. Because in that moment, they had no way of replacing their talent. And so they said, well, we can't replace them because we don't have cap space. So we just got to give them what they're asking for. No, sometimes you just got to let them walk. And is that good? Are you going to have to take a step back as a team temporarily? Absolutely. But is that what's in the best interest of your organization long term? Yes. And too often our front office does what looks appealing in the short term without considering the long term. What the fuck is the long-term plan? Someone tell me. And oftentimes when I ask other Mavs fans what the long-term plan is, they do a lot of projecting, right? Because I do follow some smart Mavs fans on Twitter, right? Some really smart. I'm in a couple group chats with some Mavs fans, really smart. Understand the game, understand shit. But when we're just sitting there bouncing around trade ideas of what this team should do, we're projecting and we're giving the Mavs too much fucking credit, because thus far, what the fuck have we shown as an organization to make you believe that we're capable of improving this team in a meaningful way? Our fucking GM walked, our former GM walked out of the room in the middle of the draft because he was upset that someone else had Mark Cuban's heart and was next to Mark Cuban and had his ear. And his influence wasn't as powerful as it once was, so he would rather walk out of the fucking room than to suck it up, right? Because if he can't yield the influence, then he doesn't want to be involved in it. That's what we had in our front office for over a fucking decade. And Mark Cuban allowed that shit. And the only reason Mark Cuban made changes at the top was because that report came to light. If you're an owner and your GM walks out of the fucking room in the middle of the draft, he should be done. The fact that Mark Cuban allowed that fucking circus show to continue for months after that, It's a fucking laughing stock. We're a fucking laughing stock. The only reason we have any credibility as an organization is because we have Luka, and Luka is the lipstick on the pig. Us having Luka will always have us in certain conversations and get us into certain rooms because we have Luka. But we are the pig and he is the lipstick. And we just have to fucking accept that. And here's the thing, right? I get fucking tired of Matt. Well, I just want to find a way to win a first round series. Yo, I'm sorry, bro. That's fucking loser talk. I don't give a fuck about winning a first round series, bro. I really don't. If we would have beat the Clippers last year and then fucking would have got swept by the Jazz in the second round, you think that's an accomplishment? Are we going to hang a banner for that shit in the rafters? Like, what are we talking about, man? Quick, tell me who lost in the second round of the playoffs 2 years ago. You don't know. Because no one gives a fuck, and neither should you. And here's the thing. When you're a young upstart team, right, and your team overachieves like we did a couple years ago where we won, you know, close to 50 games where no one expected us to, you know what I'm saying? Because Luka took that leap forward. He went from a good, promising rookie to a borderline MVP candidate. When you have that sort of success overnight, yes, that is absolutely a feel-good story. But guess what? once your best player makes that leap to borderline MVP, because remember, Luka was the betting favorite for MVP before the season, and I think even last season as well. So when the league and the gambling public is viewing your player as arguably the league's MVP before the season, certain shit comes with that. Certain expectations come with that. Because Daryl Morey will tell you, the hardest thing to do in this league is to trade for a top 10 player. There are teams that literally, the Knicks and countless other franchises, who work diligently for years to try and position themselves for the opportunity to land a top 10 player. They try to position their draft picks right. They try to position their cap situation right. They try to accumulate certain assets so that they can strike while the iron's hot in a certain offseason or in a certain trade deadline, hoping. Look at what the Celtics did. Look at the job the Celtics did of accumulating draft capital. No one had a stock of draft capital, young players, and cap space like the Celtics. And guess what? It all imploded. Why? Because drafting the top, look, Tatum is not a top 10 player. Jaylen Brown's good. He's not a top 10 player. So even when you have two young, promising wings like that, look at what that gets you. Barely 500. Why? Because in order to be, look at the Jazz. They've been fucking number one seed how many years? But no one thinks that they're an actual contender year in and year out. Why? Because they lack that top 10 talent. And we have that. We have a top 10 player. And the second you have a top 10 player, now you have to act accordingly. Guess what? We probably should have had more time to properly build this team around Luka. But the second he took that leap to MVP candidate, all that shit went out the window. Now it's time to get busy because now your championship window has opened. And so now you have to be more shrewd. You have to be smarter with your decision making. And you have to take certain chances. Now, KP was a swing. I'm not going to shit on Mark Cuban. You'll never hear me say the Mavericks fucked up by trading for Porzingis. At the time, he was a great player. Yes, he was injured. But with what we had saw with him on the Knicks, bro, he was created in a Petri dish to be paired with Luka. Running 1-5 pick and rolls with Luka and KP, a pick and pop or a rim running big. And by the way, on the defensive end, he's also tall enough to defend the rim as well. But there's a reason he's called the unicorn. So, yes, was there a 40% chance that we would end up exactly where we are now? Absolutely. But there was a 50, 60% chance that he could have been the second star that we needed next to Luka. It just didn't work out. But I'm not doing that revisionist history bullshit, right? I'm not a results over process guy. I believe in process over results. And if you do have the right process time after time after time, the results will yield them. They're going to yield the right results. The process will yield certain results. But just because you luck into something, if I walk blindfolded into traffic tonight and don't get hit by a car, that doesn't mean that my process was sound. I may have lucked out that one time. No, you have to have sound process. And thus far, we have not had sound process in recent memory. We haven't. Right. And we could talk about the 2011 championship team and whether it was worth fucking bringing them back. I'm still of the opinion that we did the right thing. And look, that was not a championship team. We won a championship, but it took Dirk going on a fucking historic run by himself in those playoffs. And yes, he just had some help from some role players, but that was part luck. That was part Dirk playing out of his fucking mind. And that was part that, hey, we caught the heat in their first year. They hadn't fully gelled yet as a team. They hadn't figured out the pecking order on offense. And so we caught them at the right time and we were able to win a championship. But if we would have played that same Heat team the following year in the finals, we'd probably get swept or losing five if we had the same roster and they had the same roster. So, no, I agree with Mark Cuban. He wants to build something that was more sustainable long term. I agree with him. Now, what he did since then, yeah. There was shit he did to fuck up, right? Passing on Giannis so we can save a couple hundred thousand against the cap so we can offer Dwight Howard the full max. Decisions like that. You know what I'm saying? Decisions like that. Never really investing in the draft and taking it seriously and drafting bum after bum after bum. Yeah, you kind of need the draft, right? The great teams, yeah, you can sign. There's only but so many players you can sign in free agency. At the same point, you have to fill out the rest of your roster to the draft. You know what I'm saying? So I've been rambling, but the point is this. I haven't been tweeting. Usually I live tweet Mavs games. I'm watching with y'all. I'm tweeting. I haven't been doing that recently. Why? I don't give a fuck. Because when you don't believe in the long-term future of a team, it's hard to get caught up in the minutia. Same shit with the Giants, right? I knew that as long as we had Dave Gettleman as our GM, we were never going to do any meaningful winning. So I didn't care about the trade deadline. I didn't care about the draft. I didn't care about free agency because I knew that none of it mattered because we were going to have a flawed process as long as Dave Gettleman was our GM. And guess what? Now I feel the same way about Mark Cuban. As long as Mark Cuban is in the room and making decisions, we will always have a flawed process. Always. And whenever you have a flawed process, time after... Sorry, it should stop recording. I don't know what happened. But the point is, whenever you have a flawed process, like we do with Mark Cuban, occasionally the results will be positive. Occasionally you're lucky into the Luka draft. You know, occasionally you might strike gold or, you know, find a good NBA play in the second round. And on occasion you will do that. But most of the times, you're going to fucking fail. And we have shown no ability to maneuver the cap. We've shown no ability to make the hard decisions. Look, this team is not a championship contender. It's just not. We are not the fucking Pacers. We are not the Oklahoma City Thunder. See, the Thunder are doing the right thing, right? Presti knows until he drafts the first or second player on a championship contending team, it's not, yes, continue to lose. Continue to position yourself to potentially land a Luka-type talent. And until you land a Luka-type talent, then keep bottoming out. It's the best thing, right? Or you can be the Pacers. And you can just be happy to have two home games a year and your owner gets to pocket the revenue from a couple home playoff games each year. And you'll always be between the fifth and the seventh seed. You know, no one ever really be scared of you. No one's ever going to label you a contender. But you'll make the playoffs and you'll be cute. And you'll be, you know, you'll get to say that, hey, we've made the playoffs. So maybe you won a division. But no one, you're not a serious fucking title contender. But that's for teams in small markets who have no chance of signing a superstar and thus far haven't had the luck to be able to draft a superstar. And even then, that guarantees you nothing. Look at Anthony Davis. Look at fucking Zion Williamson. Look at countless other teams who maybe have drafted a star but didn't have the means to build a team around that star. We have the rare opportunity where we have a perennial league MVP in his fourth year in this league. His prime should extend for another 8 to 10 years. And what is the plan? Paying Jalen Brunson and Dorian Finney-Smith $30 million a year is not a fucking viable plan. Mavs fans telling me, well, we just have to wait for a star to ask to come to Dallas. Well, let me ask you a question. If you think that Nico is influential enough to convince somebody to demand their way to Dallas via trade, why wouldn't he do that? Why couldn't he do that in free agency when there would be less obstacles to clear? When his influence could mean that we could just outright sign a player. No, now we have to convince a team that even though they're trying to work their way to Dallas, that they have to actually be agreeable to that. No, that's sheer fucking luck. What you're asking for is luck. You are hoping to blindfold yourself and walk into traffic, and you're hoping that you're going to come out clear on the other side of that street. And chances are you're probably going to end up fucking roadkill. So no, if you sign the fucking GM to yield influence, then allow him to yield that influence. Do not eat up your future cap flexibility with marginal fucking talent. And if that means that we stink this year and we get swept in the first round, so be it. So fucking be it. It does not matter. In the grand scheme of things, it does not matter. And if Luka is the competitive that I believe he is, him just making it to the second round, he's not going to be like, well, we're just happy to be here, guys. And it's all good because, hey, we won a first round playoff series. No, he's going to be upset that he got swept in the second round, because that's going to sting as much as him losing in the first round, because he's going to know, hey, we got our ass whooped in the second round, which means we're as far away from contending this year as we were when we lost in the fucking first round the past 2 years. I'm still far away, and he's still going to have that bad taste in his mouth. That isn't going to be a fucking feel-good story for Luka that he made it to the second round. That's loser talk. That's loser mentality. And I don't take Luka as somebody who's a fucking loser. He wants to win. And yeah, I get it. He's emotional. He bitches a lot. And yeah, it gets annoying. But ultimately, it's because he gives a fuck. I'd rather that than watch some of these like Bradley fucking Beal. You ever seen Bradley Beal's body language? When a shot goes up in crunch time and he wasn't the one that shot it, it doesn't even matter that the shot went in. he's still going to sag his fucking shoulders because in his mind, he should have been the one taking that shot. He doesn't give a fuck that the team won. He gives a fuck that he wasn't the one with the opportunity to help to make his team win. I don't want that on my team. We don't have that. But anyway, I've been ranting for long enough. There's no way anybody, Kirk was going to let me rant for half an hour in his green room. I don't have an actual fucking podcast that I, there's no way my actual gambling podcast, they were going to let me talk about the match for 30 minutes. So I recorded this on Anchor. Probably sounds like shit. There's no music. There's no intro. And it's probably all over the fucking place. And I rambled like a madman. But if you're listening, which maybe five of you will, if that, then it's because you care about this Mavs team as much as I do. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not apathetic. You know what I'm saying? The losses, I'm numb to the losses, but I deeply, deeply fucking care for this team. And I don't feel like that about anything in my life, really, except for some reason the fucking Mavericks. And it's because of that 2011 title. It was so unexpected. It was such just fucking, you know what I'm saying, so legacy cementing for Dirk. It meant so much to him. It meant so much to me as a fan that ever since then, I've just cared about the Mavericks more than any of my other teams combined. I grew up 2-3 blocks from Yankee Stadium. I love the Yankees. I don't love them the way I love the Mavericks. The Giants brought me two of the most improbable Super Bowl runs ever. But if you had put a gun in my hand and told me to pick which team I would want to win a championship, it'd be the Mavericks. So, there you go. Thanks for listening, if you have listened. And if you did listen, DM me, right? It's kind of frowned upon to be negative Nancy on the timeline because a lot of people like to bury their head in the sand and say, well, maybe we can trade Porzingis for Anthony Davis. That's just never going to happen. No matter how much you want it to, it's never going to happen. We're never going to trade our collection of shit players for someone else's good players. Stop with that bullshit. No, it is crazy. It's ridiculous. And don't buy into that. Be better than that. Be a better fan than that. And you being a better fan doesn't mean that you're somehow a fake fan because you're negative. No, this team deserves the negativity because we're deeply invested in this fucking team. And the fact is, you should want your owner to be better. You should want your front office to be better. You should want your players to be better. You know what I'm saying? So, on that note, peace out.